Well, comrades, it's a welcome opportunity to give some kind of flavour of titanic struggles that took place in Liverpool and the General Merseyside area in the 1980s against the government of Margaret Thatcher, the Conservative Prime Minister at the time. And in fact, almost exactly 25 years ago, I was involved in helping to build for a citywide strike of council workers in April of 1983 against the Liberal Council of that time because of their planned privatisation of services. Shortly after that, saw a big, big breakthrough in the election of a socialist-led Labour Council in May of 1983. And in the subsequent 4 years, although there was advances and retreats, ups and downs in the struggle, it represented one of the best chapters of working class struggle and solidarity in action that has been seen in modern times. It took place in part alongside the great miners' strike of 1984-5, more of that in a minute. But it was also the first occasion that Maggie Thatcher, who was dubbed the Iron Lady, who was seen as the main spear carrier for right-wing conservative reaction in Europe, actually, and maybe even worldwide at the time, it was the first defeat that she suffered in her government's period of life, and in fact the only major defeat until that around the issue of the poll tax. And there is a link, because the socialist group that played the primary role within the Liverpool Council battle went on to then be at the heart of the poll tax struggle, and that's the militant organisation of the time. I was the Merseyside Regional Secretary, or Area Secretary it was called, of Militant, and therefore had the privilege of first-hand participation in movements that included mass demonstrations of 50 and 60,000 in a city that, you should bear in mind, is substantially smaller than Glasgow in its population, and involved a succession of one-day general strikes in the region, not against the council, as would normally be the case when Labour councillors are carrying out attacks on people, but in support of the council against the national government of Thatcher and company. And it was a movement that defeated the most hard-nosed reactionary government of modern times and ushered in a whole series of reforms from which the working class people of the city gained substantially and materially. And I'll describe that in a few minutes. It was in fact the movement that put Militant on the map at the time, and it became a household name in that period, both amongst friends and enemies. Now, I'm not going to go into what has happened since in regards to that organisation or anything like that, but I do have to stress that when we talk about what took place and how it was organised, one of the things that's necessary to remember is just how much the political landscape has changed compared to then. For a start off, it seems a bit bizarre me talking about a Labour council and how good they were in Liverpool in the period 83 to 87. But the Labour Party of that period was an entirely different animal than it is now.
Absolutely.
And on top of that, one of the byproducts of it being a much more democratic organisation at that stage, relatively anyway, was the fact that it allowed for genuine socialists, including the Marxist wing of the Labour Party around Militant, to organise itself to combat the right wing, which always existed and actually always predominated on a national scale, and to organise for a socialist leadership, at least at a city level, within Liverpool, and successfully achieve a position where it was a socialist-led Liverpool District Labour Party, which had a huge impact on the thinking of the left in the rest of the UK, and led to big encouragement for socialists, including in Scotland, and led actually to the growth of that socialist force around Militant and its allies, that in turn then, as I said, gave leadership to the anti-poll tax movement that brought down the infamous Thatcher from office and into ignominy in terms of history. And that confrontation with Thatcher involved us leading tens of thousands in one region, with every enemy of socialism lined up against us, combining against us. All the forces of the old society that we live in combine to try and defeat that movement. For example, obviously the Tories, they were in government at the UK level. The Liberals, as they were then called, who in reality were the Tories of Liverpool, the press, particularly the local press, but also the national media, were absolutely vociferous and abusive in their language and in their attacks. The Liverpool Daily Echo, a daily paper, never ceased to amaze at the depths to which they would stoop in denigrating socialists, describing some of us as blue bottles that would be crushed in the pages of history, for example, as one nice expression to describe those of us leading that struggle. Even the church hierarchy, and I'll stick to my long history of being non-sectarian and anti-sectarian, because both the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church leadership in Liverpool were brutal in their attacks on Liverpool, although they bided their time and timed their attacks when they thought it was more appropriate and wouldn't alienate their flocks so much. And even MI5, the Secret Service, was ratted in terms of organising against us, which of course wouldn't surprise socialists, but we have proof, which I'll describe at the end. And the right wing of the trade unions, the right wing of the Labour Party, and in fact in the end, to anticipate the story I'm going to try and briefly sketch out, it was the leadership of people like Neil Kinnock in the Labour Party that did more damage to our battle than Thatcher ever succeeded in doing. When he succeeded in isolating the Labour Party of Liverpool, the socialist-led Labour Party, from the rest of the country to some extent, in his infamous grotesque chaos speech on the 1st of October 1985. And when we look at Liverpool, many people have this picture that it's a naturally militant and socialist city. Well, there's an aspect of its history that is like that, particularly, if you like, on the industrial front, when it comes to things like the long and heroic struggles of the Liverpool Dockers, including for other people's causes, not just their own, their solidarity with the likes of the Chilean people when they faced the Pinochet dictatorship in the 70s, and the Liverpool Dockers refused to handle their goods from Pinochet's Chile. But that's one side of its history. The other, politically, does include a long socialist and Marxist tradition, particularly going back to even the 1930s. Funnily enough, I recruited a man to militant in the battles of the 1980s and asked him had he been involved before, because there was something quite developed in his understanding immediately in the conversation. He said, "Oh yes, I used to be a member." I said, "When was that?" Because I couldn't remember it. It turned out it was in 1936, because he had joined in that period as a young fella in Liverpool and joined our predecessors. But whilst that's one part of the tradition, there's another side of it, which is that it wasn't traditionally a Labour city. And by Labour, I mean, you know, the old version of that word, not the new Labour openly capitalist party, but rather a party that had all sorts of different wings within it: the pro-capitalist, the socialist, the revolutionary socialist. In the end, could be described in shorthand as a kind of a capitalist workers' party, in the sense that sounds contradictory, and it is, but that contradiction was built into Labour, in that the leadership were always there to prop up the system, but the huge majority of the membership desired radical change, and there was an organised socialist wing or wings to it throughout its history of varying size and percentage. But Liverpool was not traditionally a Labour-dominated city. For example, one simple figure to remember is that in 1951, the Tories won 51% of the vote in the general election in Liverpool. And right up until the 60s at least, they still had a majority of Tory MPs in the city. And the background, the more immediate background to the 83 struggle, was where the Liberals and Tories had an undeclared coalition at city council level in the previous 4 years, from 79 to 83 in the main. There's more detail than that, but that's a broad description. And during that period of Liberal-dominated rule, awful attacks were carried out against people's conditions. There wasn't a single council house built in that four-year period, even though Liverpool had some of the worst homelessness in the whole of Europe. The rents went up by 140% in that period. The rates, which now council tax, the rates rose by the same percentage in 4 years, 140%. More than doubled, in other words. Jobs were decimated. Jobs in private industry, jobs throughout the employment sectors. Like, for example, in that period up to 84, 65,000 jobs were lost on Merseyside. And 25% unemployment existed at the time in the city. So that was the general background, on top of which the Liberal Council declared cuts, some of which were not specified, but included 1,000 further redundancies being announced in early 1983, and a whole package of privatisation of things like the cleansing service, from memory, the services in the colleges, for example, that they ran at that stage, and other measures of that kind. Now, the Tories carried out cuts in local government funding, and cutbacks in the powers of councils, gradually and incrementally. But it's reckoned, or we reckoned at the time, that in the previous 4 years, the Liberals collaborated with the Tories in allowing £250 million to be stolen off the Liverpool City Council by central government fund cuts without any resistance. In fact, with the active collaboration of the Liberals in charge of the city. But developments took place in the workers' movement around that same period that led to the conflict of the mid-80s. The Labour Party in Liverpool in the 50s, 60s, early 70s even, was probably quite like that of Glasgow, which was rotten to the core in terms of its right-wing domination, rotten to the core in terms of backhanders being given by the likes of building company operators for Labour Party policy to be ignored in terms of housing plans, for example. And it was one dominated by the big fiefdoms of people like Bessie Braddock, that you might have heard of in history, who was a right-wing Labour councillor, and whose husband Jack was an MP, amongst the other way around. And they dominated a lot of Liverpool Labour politics, but to the detriment of socialism and to the detriment of the interests of working class people and families. It was a right-wing dominated Labour Party in that period. But socialists in the Labour Party, including Militant, which as a newspaper was only established in 1964, but as a small group that produced that paper existed prior to it, worked away within the Labour Party in order to organise, not with the goal of changing the leadership, or the minds of the leadership, I should say, but to try and act as a socialist ingredient which helped to give direction to as many of the ranks of the party as possible. And the growth of Militant's influence took place particularly in the late 60s, the 70s especially onwards, and helped to carry out a process quite consciously of democratising the Liverpool Labour Party, the city, or what was called the District Labour Party. We and others on the left in the Labour Party demanded things like that the councillors had to carry out policies that were agreed at an annual policy-making conference of the party itself, what was called the Municipal Policy-Making Conference. And we argued for measures of control over the council leadership if Labour was to get a majority. That whole process was accelerated and strengthened after an experience, a brief episode, in 1979, when Labour was the biggest party in the council elections, but was a minority, and decided to take the chair's positions of council subcommittees, and in turn, as a minority government in the city, end up carrying out some terrible policies, including a 50% increase in the rates, and of course got a drubbing from the electorate in the subsequent elections, were hammered for carrying out such punitive measures towards working class families. That strengthened the arguments of those of us who were putting it forward that the councillors should not be allowed to do their own thing, which is what they did, because that was against Liverpool District Labour Party policy, what they carried out. But they defied the party ranks as a whole and acted as the Labour group of councillors, semi-independently of the party as a whole. And we fought and argued for measures of accountability over the councillors and their leadership, as well as over policy. and succeeded in bringing that about in the late 70s, early 80s, to the extent that Liverpool became the biggest Labour Party in the country in terms of active participation, with mass meetings of 400 and 500 during the course of the council battles, of members, I mean voting members, when you'd be lucky to get 50 in other cities. It was the most socialist Labour Party in terms of its policies in Britain, and adopted policies on the council which we had put forward in Millicent and others on the left as well, which included on questions such as housing, on job creation in the council, on no rent rises, on no rise on the rates beyond the level of inflation, and of reversal of privatisation plans by the Liberal council that was being kicked out. Those kinds of policies we fought for, adopted as a party, and then went out to popularise, and began also, very importantly, to build a force within the trade unions in the council, around Millicent and beyond, which helped to consolidate the position for the battle that was to come. In fact, an important simple statement is that it was what we built up in the trade unions prior to winning a majority on the council that laid the foundations for the battle that defeated Thatcher. It was also the limitations of that force within the unions that in some respects was our downfall later on, when it came to Kinnock being able to isolate and defeat the party. So that for me is one of the things that underlines the importance of building a socialist base within the unions, as well as within a political party as such. Now, the first phase of the battle was in opposition to the Liberals' plans, their privatisation, their job cuts of 1,000 and so on. And it led, like I said, to a one-day strike, or I think it may have been a half-day strike, I've forgotten now, in April of 1983, by at least a section of the council workforce, a workforce with 30,000 on it, by the way. And that brought the hot breath of opposition on the next the Liberal council that was meeting that day, which then decided to postpone his plans out of fear of the consequences. But the rabbit had been let loose, or the hare, whatever the cliche is, because the point being that by then people were beginning to waken up to what Liberal rule actually involved, because we had actively highlighted what it involved. And a section of the working class in the council workforce were radicalised by that conflict with the council, and it led to the victory of Labour in 1983 in May. And I remember during that election campaign, council workers out fighting for a Labour victory, for a socialist Labour council, and the politicisation that had taken place was summed up for me by the fact in one area of the city that I was working in at the time, in the Dingle, which is where that horrendous programme Bread is filmed, down near the riverside. And there was bin wagons with red flags on them, council workers out canvassing and campaigning for a Labour victory in that period, which was a sign of the politicisation of the workforce. What took place then was that when Labour got elected with a majority of the seats, 51 Labour, 30 Lib Dems and 18 Tories, so an absolute majority just about, for the first time in years, then what took place, unlike other Labour councils, was that under our socialist leadership, we told the truth to the working class. Very simple idea, but not often practised. Mm-hmm. We told the truth by saying, there's a choice here. We can bow the knee and carry out Lib Dems or Liberal cuts, which will mean at least 1,000 council jobs to go. It'll mean wholesale privatisation. It'll mean another rate increase of maybe 40 or 50% and no improvement in your livelihood or your housing conditions. Or we can fight. We can take on the government. And we also said there's no guarantee in advance of victory, but we have to engage in that battle and see if it's possible to win by uniting and mobilising people around the same demands. And the other key importance for socialists to learn from is that we identified a few main things that we would constantly bang on about in propaganda in literature, in leaflets, at street corner meetings, at public meetings in the schools, at meetings at the council depots, at meetings at the factory gates, meetings in the city centre, on the street. And that was that we said, no rent rises, no rate rises above inflation, no job cuts, no redundancies, no privatisation, give us back our 25 million. Now, give us back our 25 million was the calculation that in order to carry out the policies that the Labour Party had put forward, it would be necessary to get an additional £25 million of the central government in grants to balance the books. And that money wasn't there and wasn't immediately forthcoming, because the government wasn't just about to roll over debt and hand it over to a socialist council by us begging for it. So we began to organise for the fight to get it. And the way we did it included a conference of local authority trade unionists in Liverpool in September of 83, a couple of months after the election, during work time, all brought together, I think it was in the Philharmonic Hall, addressed by the leadership of the Socialist Council, spelling out again the harsh realities, struggle or starve, fight or give in, join us and we'll lead you, or recognise there's going to be job cuts, privatisation and loss of services. We then built for a demonstration in November of 83 on a freezing Saturday, where there was between 20 and 25,000 people marched through Liverpool in defence of the council, again with the slogans I've mentioned, including give us back our 25 million.